Blog Talk Radio.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black, tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. Can't take the sky from me. There's no place I can be since I found serenity. You can't take the sky from me.
Good evening. You are live with your favorite Rovebusters, Tex and Rex. Irreverent, relevant, and radioactive, conservatism with a bite. I'm Rex with my proton pack strapped on, broadcasting to you from the Imperial City.
This is Tex, broadcasting from right behind you in Texas. The calls are coming from inside the house, so welcome to another Tex and Rex show, where we are leading the charge as Rove Busters to try to get the GOP back on track and maybe help diminish the role of one of the people who probably has been most chiefly involved in, if not at the forefront of, taking the Republican Party down a path towards defeat and irrelevance over the last, over a decade now. Finally, it seems there's some blood in the water, so that's a good thing, I would think. But I'll turn it back over to Rex to kick us off. And Rex, what do you got for us?
Well, that's the focus. It's been an interesting week, because it seems like a lot of people are piling on little Rover, the Roverian. But again, you know, the big money, the establishment, the non-conservative, compassionate conservative, neoconservative, whatever the hell they're called, incumbents, are still of this mindset. And interestingly enough, Newt has come out hard on this point. Without beating up too much on that other guy that you and I really can't stand, little clown prince Pubic, ostensibly because he is the chairman, so Newt needs his ear in order to get these things done. But, you know, we're going to talk about Karl Rove, because I think that he is the epitome of what is wrong with the Republican Party. I mean, would you agree that he kind of embodies everything that is wrong with the Republican Party, which for all intents and purposes is the, you know, flagship brand name for conservatism?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I wouldn't say he epitomizes what's wrong with the Republican Party. He is the Republican Party, certainly in his own mind, and to a large degree for a lot of people. He is the man behind the curtain, the puppet master, if you will. Unfortunately, his strings were cut a long time ago, and he's running his puppets thinking he's having an effect, but he's having spectacular losses in campaigns. Not that, you know, as we've said many times, I ever thought this guy was all that successful at winning campaigns. He seems to think he's very successful at it, but I think his record is dubious at best. But, you know, this is the big pole in the tent. This is the guy who's causing all the problems and who's been taking the Republican Party down a path that the Republican voters don't support. I'm seeing under Rove's leadership, if we count that leadership in national politics going back to, let's say, 2000, you know, when he first really emerged on the stage that people saw him with George Bush's campaign. Since that time, the Republican Party has been going pretty much in the exact opposite direction that the Republican voters have wanted it to go, which is why you have declining voter identification among conservatives with the Republican Party, a lack of enthusiasm, and the GOP's negatives have gone up massively in the minds of the American people, because the party itself, or the party as epitomized and conceived and directed and led by Karl Rove, is going in the wrong direction, and it's not winning over Democrats by going to the left. It's seen as a fake, phony move by a party that has lost its moral and intellectual bearings and is willing to say and do anything in order to get elected, Mitt Romney. And in the meantime, while not only is it not impressing Democrats, but it's infuriating Republicans. And so this monster that Karl Rove has created, this Frankenstein monster of a party, is just running around, and the villagers are trying to pin it up in the barn somewhere and burn the thing down because nobody likes it.
Well, what's to like?
It does have an elephant.
Yeah, that's wonderful. It's got the same imagery. But, I mean, what's to like? I mean, if you really think about it, right, this is a party that purports to be conservative, right? And instead, it is further left than the Democrat Party was before the new left took over the Democrat Party. And they're crapping on libertarians as if libertarians somehow are alien to the Republican Party, which is just, you know, insane. And I think, you know, we might all need a little...
The Republican Party doesn't need voters or a base of support anymore. This is Karl Rove's new vision.
Yeah. Well, it's a shitty vision, Carl. It's a shitty vision. Look, I think that sometimes we're victims of, you know, the soundbite media, the Twitter speed of information. We kind of forget the history, you know. You got to remember a few things. I mean, who is the epitome of republicanism? Ronald Reagan, right? Well, let's look back historically, right? Ronald Reagan was an FDR New Deal Democrat. And then when the party, the Democrat Party, moved far to the left from where they even were under FDR, Reagan found himself without a home. You know, he always says, I didn't leave the Democrat Party, the Democratic Party left me. And it's true. They moved so far to the left, especially with the whole, you know, new left takeover that occurred, you know, I guess with McGovern and that whole Chicago convention mess. And then, you know, before you know it, you got the Alinsky radicals running the Democrat Party, and people like Reagan, who were, you know, standard Democrats, but they found themselves without a home, and then, you know, they went to the Republican Party. And, you know, Reagan, you know, has some solid conservative credentials, but he's also got some massive mistakes that he made as governor on the social issues. He's got massive mistakes in influence from, you know, some neocons. And, of course, you know, as vice president, you know, George, eat my shorts, no new taxes. Bush was absolutely a disaster. But just look at that drift that we've had from the FDR Democrat Party that left Reagan to where we are today. You know, this party is way to the left of Reagan, who used to be a Democrat. You know, how the hell did that happen? And if you really look at the Republican Party, I mean, the last time the Republican Party was actually conservative was 1924 with Coolidge's reelection. And, you know, by the 30s, the Republican Party found itself out in the wilderness, you know, without any representation to do anything. I mean, they were in the minority. You know, FDR was rising, progressivism was rising.
The Republican Party became kind of an irrelevant country club, group of people sitting around playing pinochle, talking to one another, but they had no real political power. They would get quoted in newspapers, but they were completely ineffective during that period, and they're rapidly heading back to that. And the thing is, if this party won't alter course and start engaging in the debate and taking on the debate head on and taking criticism and flack willingly in order to lead the nation in the direction it wants to go, well, the Republican voters are done sitting around waiting for these rudderless leaders, quote leaders, to lead the party in the direction that it wants to go, and they'll find a new party and a new direction and new leadership, because the Republican Party is just an organization. Organizations don't last forever. And if this one won't do the job, well, screw you, we'll find someone who will.
Yeah, well, exactly. And I think, though, that some of the dissatisfaction, you know, I mean, we're going to point fingers at Rove, and we're going to point out what he did. And I think, you know, Newt Gingrich has done a solid job this week of exposing Carl for who he is, you know, Ham Rove, basically. I mean, he's nothing more than a useless piece of ham. But the thing to me is that, you know, once, like you said, they became the country club party, they were happy with their positions, they were happy with their committee memberships and all this stuff, and they didn't stand for anything, so they just got bowled over by FDR, and they didn't seem to mind. And then there was, you know, one Kerax, you know, a herald, came out of practically nowhere with no base. It was all grassroots in 64, and that was Goldwater, right? And he came and he swept the convention and he got the nomination. Oh, that's crazy. That's crazy. Those young people with their $50 contributions took over the convention, and then they put up this guy who's a complete crazy man. Well, and then he
our
went on
to people don't support that. The big money people were funding failure for years after years, plowing money into failure. And then someone like Goldwater comes along and, you know, excites the base, excites the youth vote, and the party wants to get rid of them. And same old story over and over again. The Republican Party doesn't want to win. They want to be the rump party. So you got to get rid of those rump people. Kick them in the rump. Get them out of the party.
Well,
or at least get them to the sidelines so they can't do any more damage.
Yeah, well, that's what they did with Ron Paul in 2012. It's what they did with, well, they tried to do with Goldwater, you know, back then, but Goldwater got the nomination, went on to a spectacular loss. Now, you and I both know that Goldwater didn't lose because of his positions, his extreme crazy positions. Why'd he lose? Who was he running against?
He lost because Kennedy was assassinated. He was running against Johnson. It's
right.
The successor to Kennedy. That's why he lost.
To Camelot. The successor to Camelot. I mean, you know, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, let's face it.
And
Johnson.
They say it's all because of that stupid Daisy ad that only ever ran once, and only the media thinks that that was the important deciding factor. The deciding factor was they created this mythology of Kennedy's Camelot, which is complete bogus BS. And, you know, they were basically, when Kennedy got elected, they were having a coronation and crowning a king, and then the king died, and now you have somebody coming up running against him who's grassroots, and the media hated it, the Republican Party establishment hated it, and so they all made sure that the baby was strangled in the cradle. That was the problem with it.
Well, exactly. And, I mean, the thing is, if you really want to draw an analogy, I mean, you know, Johnson was Kennedy's Bush. I mean, Johnson was to Kennedy what H.W. Bush was to Reagan. Johnson and Kennedy didn't like each other. They didn't agree with anything, you know, hardly anything with each other. But Johnson ran on the Kennedy, you know, Camelot mystique, and he won. But the interesting thing is, who was really pushing, who kind of put Goldwater on the map, so to speak? I mean, of course, it was a grassroots movement, but who made the big push, who made the big public move for Goldwater?
Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan. And, you know, just to refresh everybody's memory, I got a three-minute segment of his speech, A Time for Choosing, we're going to listen to, but I strongly recommend that you find that whole speech and listen to it. It is as relevant, if not more relevant today than it was in the late 60s. Tex, you and I will come back on the other side of this 3 minutes, and we'll continue with this walk down memory lane just to kind of bring us up to where we are and why the Republican Party is where it is.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you and good evening. The sponsor has been identified, but unlike most television programs, the performer hasn't been provided with a script. As a matter of fact, I have been permitted to choose my own words and discuss my own ideas regarding the choice that we face in the next few weeks. I have spent most of my life as a Democrat. I recently have seen fit to follow another course. I believe that the issues confronting us cross party lines. Now, one side in this campaign has been telling us that the issues of this election are the maintenance of peace and prosperity. The line has been used, we've never had it so good. But I have an uncomfortable feeling that this prosperity isn't something on which we can base our hopes for the future. No nation in history has ever survived the tax burden that reached a third of its national income. Today, 37 cents out of every dollar earned in this country is the tax collector's share. And yet our government continues to spend $17 million a day more than the government takes in. We haven't balanced our budget 28 out of the last 34 years. We've raised our debt limit 3 times in the last 12 months. And now our national debt is 1.5 times bigger than all the combined debts of all the nations of the world. We have $15 billion in gold in our treasury. We don't own an ounce. foreign dollar claims are $27.3 billion. And we've just had announced that the dollar of 1939 will now purchase 45 cents in its total value. As for the peace that we would preserve, I wonder who among us would like to approach the wife or mother whose husband or son has died in South Vietnam and ask them if they think this is a peace that should be maintained indefinitely. Do they mean peace, or do they mean we just want to be left in peace? There can be no real peace while one American is dying someplace in the world for the rest of us. We're at war with the most dangerous enemy that has ever faced mankind in his long climb from the swamp to the stars. And it's been said if we lose that war, and in so doing lose this way of freedom of ours, history will record with the greatest astonishment that those who had the most to lose did the least to prevent its happening. Well, I think it's time we ask ourselves if we still know the freedoms that were intended for us by the founding fathers. Not too long ago, two friends of mine were talking to a Cuban refugee, a businessman who had escaped from Castro. And in the midst of his story, one of my friends turned to the other and said, "We don't know how lucky we are." And the Cuban stopped and said, "How lucky you are. I had some place to escape to." And in that sentence, he told us the entire story. If we lose freedom here, there's no place to escape to. This is the last stand on earth.
There you have it. That was a three-minute segment from the speech that made the national push for Goldwater. Now, interestingly enough, that's the man that would go on to bring us the, you know, ostensibly the first Republican conservative president in a very long time, since probably the FDR years. I know some people argue Eisenhower was conservative, but, you know, that's dubious at best. But the interesting thing is that for all that time, up until, you know, the Goldwater grassroots movement, the Republicans were happy to be the losing side and just, you know, enjoy their committee positions. And then came these rabble-rousers, and look, it still took more than a decade, almost, you know, a decade and a half before this movement was able to push into the mainstream of the Republican Party. And frankly, it took the disaster of the 70s. It took the massive, embarrassing collapse of the Nixon administration. It took the, you know, terrible Carter years in order to give the impetus for, you know, the Reagan movement to get there. And, you know, there it was considerably more conservative than the Republican Party had been. Yeah, there were some problems, predominantly the H.W. Bush faction. And then, of course, he ran as a Reaganite and turned out to be a rhino. And it wasn't until 94 that we had a legislative movement towards conservatism. That was, of course, led by Speaker Newt Gingrich. Now, you know, we can argue how conservative everything he did was or not, but the simple fact is he got more conservative things done as Speaker of the House than any Republican since the 1920s. And what was his reward
Absolutely.
Text? What was his reward for actually moving the party to the right and moving the whole government, including a liberal Democrat president, to the right?
They got rid of him. That's what they did. Didn't want to see that anymore. Whoa. All that conservative stuff. Hey, look, we may say that when we're running for office, but you sure don't do that when you get into power. And so they got rid of him. That's what they did.
And
then when he starts
right.
coming back, they're cursing his name. Certainly Karl
yeah.
Rove is, because Karl Rove was instrumental once Karl Rove got in with Bush Jr. Into Washington. He went about and methodically undid everything Gingrich had done with respect to balancing the budget at the federal level.
Yep.
He was all about, Karl Rove's idea was to go adopt the FDR model, which is go buy votes. We'll buy seniors with a prescription drug benefit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll go fund the churches, so we'll lock up the, you know, the religious vote, even though you have that already. But, you know, we'll do that with, what was that called, the faith-based initiatives things. Of course, the church wisely said, no, thank you. We don't want Washington all of a sudden telling us what we can preach and what we can't preach in our churches, because that's what happens if you get money from the
yep.
federal government.
String.
And, yeah, and then, you know, the steel tariffs, remember that? That's kind of often forgotten, but Bush did some steel
mm-hmm.
tariffs to protect the steel industry. That was to help out the unions. And the whole idea was to buy off these votes, but it didn't work.
Yep. Well, now why is that? I mean, let's face it. You know, why was that his impetus? Well, let's go back to the 60s again, right? We got Goldwater, we got Reagan giving the speech, and in 1968, that is when little Carl Rover got his first taste of, you know, politics, right? That's when he got into the game back then. So
yep.
The question you have to ask yourself is, did he get into the game because of the excitement of the Goldwater grassroots movement, the excitement about Reagan's speech, or something more pragmatic than that? And the fact is that, you know, he was a typical, college Republican at the time, which was establishment party, you know, nothing really overtly conservative. They weren't clearly, you know, neocons or rhinos yet, but they were certainly on their way. And that's how he got into it. Yeah. So, you know, he got into it and he was relatively successful at it. It seems that he had the talent for it, right? So, you know, I found that interesting that that's when he got into the game, and he obviously got into it on the wrong side. And I'm not sure exactly where he got into it, but I believe at the time he was in school at the University of Utah, nowhere near Texas, I guess. And then, of course, he had his own little Watergate incident back then. You know that he actually used a false ID to break into the – well, break into, but, you know, under false pretense, go into the campaign office of the Democrat who was running for treasurer in Illinois or something, and he grabbed like 1,000 sheets of the campaign letterhead and sent them out to kind of, you know, the riffraff in Illinois, promising free beer, free food, girls, and a good time for nothing, so that he would disrupt one of his events. So, you know, and he got a little trouble for that, and it was, you know, written off as a teenage prank. I think he was 19 or 20 at the time, you know. But doesn't that kind of tell you the kind of guy that he is when that's how he starts out in politics? What would you say about that, Tex?
As the twig is bent, so is the tree inclined.
Yeah.
I would say, you know, he sort of specializes in dirty politics. And I think that was on display in the 2012 election, and going after conservative candidates so that he could puff up his next big rhino, the Midster, that nobody ever wanted or wanted to see elected. And it was a spectacular failure. And one of the reasons that people are so gleefully watching the demise of Karl Rove and his influence in the party is because of the way he got his rise and the way he treated other candidates who ostensibly are on the same team as his. You know, he treats them terribly, ruins their good name so that he can puff up his candidate that nobody wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we now see the results of that. Mitt Romney actually is supposed to be speaking at CPAC, is he not?
Who?
Yeah, exactly. He's going to come up. He's going to come up back from the dead and give some kind of speech, I guess, to remind everybody why we didn't like Mitt Romney in the first place, to remind everyone how horribly they compromised their principles in supporting them because they thought they had no other choice. And, you know, either he can go and repudiate the things on which he was running, you know, being a, just come out and say, this is who I really am, this is what I really believe, or, you know, he's going to go off and, you know, say that this is the new direction of the party is this left wing type party, and I just think it's going to basically it's a skunk in the punch bowl. I don't think anybody wants to see that. I don't think we want to be reminded about Romney. I don't think Romney ever represented a viable path for the party to take, to have him speaking there. Yes, he was the former candidate and nominee, but, you know, I would give him a very short speech at 2 o'clock in the morning in a small room of donors.
Well, the question you have to ask yourself is, even the guys who supported Romney, do they want to see him? I mean, this is just, I mean, I don't even know what to say.
Boy, it sure would be nice if we had some grenades, don't you think?
I mean, it's insane.
Yeah. I think that's pretty close to the reactions.
You know, what are you going to do? It's actually no surprise because, frankly, I think, you know, Carl has to kind of pander, quote, to the Tea Party. You know, he gave $2.9 million out of his $500 billion.
That.
You know, but I think he has to pander, but he also can't completely cut his affiliation with Romney because he's still got to sell us on the idea that Romney was a good choice for the party. We just made some technological mistakes. So I think that's one of the reasons he's going to bring him back. But the interesting thing is Rove's monster was forced upon us through an illegal convention. This is not Rove's first time to the dance with contested conventions. You know, back in 73, when he was running for the college Republicans' chair, it was questionable as to whether he had won. He was, you know, dumpster diving and digging up dirt on his opponents and pulling all sorts of rules shenanigans and all this kind of crazy stuff. And, in fact, some of the states actually sent two competing delegations. Does that sound familiar? To the convention. And then, at the time, RNC chairman George Eat My Shorts H.W. Bush, okay, had an FBI agent question Rove about this whole thing, and I believe it also involved an interview with Lee Atwater, another name that people are familiar with, and if I'm not mistaken, also Counselor John Dean was involved, John Dean of the famous Watergate break-in happening about the same time, and I think that it was the Watergate.
Better.
Yeah, I think it was the Watergate thing. Counselor Troy was definitely better and certainly more appealing to look at than John Dean. I'm sure that we'll be getting a call from Robert Jetter soon with the Star Trek reference. But the fascinating thing to me is that I think the Watergate thing overrode it. But oddly enough, all of a sudden, Chairman Bush, H.W. Bush, suddenly just gives it to Rove. And we're not exactly sure what happened because it's one of those, you know, backroom smoky deals, right? But he gives it to Rove, and his opponent at the time, I believe his name was Edgeworth, okay? He apparently wrote a letter, wanting an answer. You know, he said, I wanted to know why I wasn't, you know, I didn't have my fair say, you know, sort of like what happened to Ron Paul at this convention that Rove was in charge of. And apparently he's on record as saying that George H.W. Bush sent him back the angriest letter that he'd ever read and basically just telling them that, party unity, blah, 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 all that kind of crap. And that began the Bush-Rove love affair. Interesting,
though. Very, very interesting. Well, one of the things about Karl Rove's new conservative kill pack for the conservative victory project is that he got lambasted for this thing pretty much across the board by the Tea Party and by the financiers of the Republican Party as this not being a good idea. And he sort of tried to wrap himself up in the mantle of the Tea Party because he realized, you know, they always say the Tea Party's dead, the Tea Party's dead, the Tea Party is ineffective, the Tea Party was destroying Washington. They want to come in and balance the budget. That's going to destroy everything. These Tea Party people are too radical, and they don't know what they're doing. And then he says, you know, I'm not trying to get rid of all these Tea Party candidates. I mean, I want to see more candidates like Rand Paul. So he instantly grabs the flag of Rand Paul and drapes that over himself to protect himself because I think he realized that he basically walked out onto the plank and started sawing the thing off behind him, which is not a good strategy. And
unless you're a Jedi Knight.
Yes.
Unless you're a Jedi, then it kind of works out. Yeah. And Karl Rove, you're no Jedi. I know.
Unless you have the high ground. So he says, this is a quote from Fox. This is on Hannity, where Karl Rove is defending himself. He spent a long time stating that he is not, in fact, a douchebag, even though he is. But he said, look, if you take the attitude that nobody ought to be involved in primaries, fine. I don't know who's taking this attitude, so this is a good intellectual defense for himself. So are you saying that nobody should be involved in primaries? No, we're not saying that at all, Carl. What if you take the attitude that some groups ought to be able to be involved in primaries? I would assume this is the Tea Party. And not other groups, mm-hmm. this would be the Karl Rove's Conservative Kill Pack, then there's a little hypocrisy there. And we just have, and we have a right, just like everybody else, to be involved in a low-key, congenial fashion. So see where he's carved out a little space for him? Now Karl Rove is low-key and collegial. You're not low-key. Yeah. You're not collegial. You're sort of, you have the megaphone. You're on Fox News all the time. You're telling everybody what to think and do, and you're stabbing everyone in the back behind the scenes. And we're not saying that nobody should be involved in primaries. We're just saying that you shouldn't be involved in primaries because you're terrible at it, and you don't believe what the grassroots of the Republican Party believes, and you've actively been working against it. And when you get caught with your hand in the cookie jar, then you come after the Tea Party as the problem when 7 out of 9 of the candidates that you were supporting didn't even make it. And there's no, well, that's not quite right. 9 candidates didn't make it, one of which was Aiken and one of which was Murdoch. And the other 7, there is no reason, no Tea Party excuse for Karl Rove to hide behind as to why those candidates didn't win.
Those were his candidates.
They were his candidates. So he's going after the 2 Tea Party candidates that didn't lose to say that the Tea Party is the problem. Meanwhile, this guy's got 7 defeats stacked up behind him for which, and these are rhinos for which there is no other explanation than the fact that nobody wants to go in the direction that Karl Rove wants to take the party. And I would add about Murdoch and Aiken is that once they won over the rhinos that Karl Rove and the RNC had been supporting, guess what? The RNC and Karl Rove's pack pulled back support. And then they lost. Mm-hmm. What if they had actually received support? Maybe they would have won. Did anybody ever think of that? But yet the whole machine went whole hog behind these 7 candidates and they still lost. Okay, so you have 2 losses that went without any support except grassroots support from small donors. Big donors ran away from them. And the Democrat Party went after them, you know, hammer and tong. Okay, so they lost. Well, that was a pretty unfair fight. And then you have these 7 other fair fights, and Karl Rove loses, but oh, no, that's not a problem. We need to see more of that because those were the, quote, most conservative candidates who could, quote, win. You know,
talk about bastardizing Buckley's, comment there.
Yeah. Yeah, he doesn't care about the most conservative candidate.
Bullshit.
He doesn't really want conservatives. He wants rhinos. He wants people who are going to move in the Washington direction, in the establishment direction, because Karl Rove realized that being in Washington is very lucrative, and what he wants are more candidates in Washington who can hand over the lucre, not people who are going to go throw a break in the growth of government.
Exactly, Tyson. I mean, he has a record of that. I mean, even in your state, right, where he's allegedly from, because that's, you know, where his position came from, you know, Big Daddy Bush. In fact, when he first met W. Bush, he kind of fell in love with it. It was a little bit, you know, weird because he described the first meeting as, and there was this the son coming from Harvard Business School and huge amounts of charisma, swagger, cowboy boots, flight jacket, wonderful smile, just charisma, you know, wow. I mean, dude, these people just, like, gave him everything. And in your state, he's so good that he's run campaigns to defeat Ron Paul as congressman, and he brought you Rick Perry from the Democrat Party. So clearly what you just said is spot on. He's not about conservatives. When he says the most – let's be clear. It's a linguistic twist, the most conservative candidate who can win. What he really means is the most conservative candidate I can tolerate – who can win and deliver me a rhino. And let's be clear about things. What's most conservative? Well, if in rhino terms, the most conservative is like, you know, Marco Rubio, one who talks conservative but isn't.
Well, what he wants is when he says the most conservative candidate, what he means is the most malleable candidate that he can control. That's what he's really talking about.
I think that you just nailed it. Say that again. The most say that again. That's a great observation.
The most malleable candidate that he can control. That's what he wants.
Oh, nice shooting, Tex.
There it is. There it is.
There we go. Yep.
And let's do Tex. Let's do a little housekeeping. It's 30 minutes into the show, so folks. Call the number. We're going to take call second hour, 646-649-1013. And a couple of things, articles, clips, things like the Hannity Rove apologetic that Tex just referenced. These are all available on our Facebook page. That is the Tex and Rex Show on Facebook. And also you can join Tex and Rex's Liberty Militia on Facebook, and we've got all the clips, articles, and such that we're referencing in there so that you can follow along at home while we are broadcasting. And if you're in Blog Talk Radio right now, you can take advantage of our chat. And also, under the show icon, there is a follow button. Click follow, and you will get notifications in your Blog Talk Radio profile as to when we are broadcasting, which is usually weekly, Sundays, 10 p.m. Eastern. But every now and then, like we did with Mark Willis, we might have a midweek show because of developing situations and developing news. Also, if you follow, I mean, not follow, you can't follow, if you like our Facebook page, the Tex and Rex Show, you will receive in your news feed when we broadcast, you will get notifications that way as well. And if you're just going to do a search on Blog Talk Radio, just type in Tex and Rex Show. It'll bring up a whole list of all the shows that we've done. And just click on Buy Tex and Rex. It'll take you to our main page. That's Tex and Rex on Blog Talk Radio. And it'll have all of our archives as well as our upcoming broadcasts and the live show if we are broadcasting live. The important thing to note about the archives, if you right-click on the archive, you can play it in your browser, your iPhone, or whatever, anytime, but if you right-click on the download link, you can download an MP3. Now, here's the important thing. We're providing you with, as usual, irreverent, relevant, and radioactive content, but unless you get it out there, and unless you utilize it, unless you go to your conventions and your meetings and party meetings and use this information, it doesn't do much good. Then we become just like Rushbow and Hannity and all the other talking douchebags without any real action. Because we're talking about grassroots movement here to ditch the Rovian model of rhinoism in this party, because until another party steps up to take over the conservative brand, it's the conservative, it's the Republican Party is the conservative party. It's not conservative, but that's what everybody thinks. Locally, you might use the Libertarian Party or the Constitution Party, but on the national stage, at least for another couple of election cycles, it's going to be the Republican Party. So if you want any change on the national level, it is the GOP, and that's what you got to fight for. Nevertheless, the important thing is to share that information so you can download an MP3, and we want to thank all of you out there who have been supporting us. And our show is bigger than ever thanks to you, especially you know, Cindy and Arlene and whoever else has been posting the show, you know, Harriet, Cheryl, anybody who I forgot, please know that we really appreciate what you've done. You've gotten the show out there. Use the information. And, in fact, hopefully in the second hour we'll get a report about a convention and see how people are actually moving things in the conservative direction. Now, one of the problems that we have with Karl Rove is that he is dividing us and using the media to divide us by pitting conservatives who are in the Reagan-Gingrich mold against, quote, conservatarians or libertarians in the perhaps Goldwater-Ron Paul mode, okay? We're not enemies. We have differences, but you all have to put your tomahawks down, learn to get along, because the enemy is the rhinos. That's the enemy. It's not the libertarians. It's not the conservatives. So don't start throwing neocon labels out to anybody who isn't a purist libertarian, and don't throw out pot-smoking, pro-gay marriage, you know, conspiracy nut jobs to every person on the libertarian side. That is how you will never gain success and you might as well just kiss Rove's ass now, because he's going to be the big daddy boss. If you want him gone, then you got to step up. And that's very important for you, quote, libertarians out there, Ron Paul Revolution, Campaign for Liberty people, because Newt Gingrich, who some of you consider a neocon, is a very powerful tool. This man is an acute political strategist. He knows how to use the media. And in Human Events, he wrote a wonderful piece that I think Texas actually already quoted a little bit. It's called Why Rove and Stevens Are Plain Wrong. So, Tex, if you want to continue on that vein, go for it.
Absolutely. Well, I want to say something. We talked last week about how Marco Rubio's speech, his response to the State of the Union, was very defensive. And just to continue on with Carl Rove's little exchange, he had a bit of a dust-up with Bob Woodward, actually, on
yeah.
Fathead show Hardball, and
yep.
I thought that I might play just a little bit of that for you right now, where this is what Bob Woodward actually said. So I'm holding my microphone up to the video right now, and this is what Bob Woodward actually said. Hold on.
You're going to set yourself up as a Republican hero. Very least to Republicanism is to let the local state
Rand Paul had it right. Everybody's got a chance. We believe in markets. Let people go in and participate. We should. That's just the opposite of Politburo. Okay. So here you have, you know, Mr. Left Wing Bob Woodward standing up for the little guy against the people in Washington defending it. And then there you saw Karl Rove throw up. You know, wrap himself in the flag of Rand Paul because he knows he's gone a bridge too far. But when he was asked about this on Hannity, he came up with a defensive answer, which is that he said, last time I checked, the Politburo oversaw the extermination of tens of millions of people and during the Cold War threatened the United States with nuclear annihilation. I, Karl Rove, am not that bad. That's what his defense was. He says, he continues, just because Woodward is a center-left journalist, he can get away with calling me a communist, and nobody's bothered by this. Okay, so what was the Politburo actually? Well, the Politburo was nominally elected by the Central Committee of the Communist Party, but the reality is the Politburo was a self-perpetuating body that decided which new members would be admitted and who would be expelled. And what better term to describe what Karl Rove is talking about in his conservative victory project or his conservative pill pack than the Politburo, because that's exactly what he's setting up. And rather than discuss that charge directly, he comes up with this nonsense, oh, well, they killed tens of millions of people. I haven't killed tens of millions of people. I don't think that's really a viable defense for him, but I thought the criticism by Woodward was actually spot on, and I think that's why it stung Rove so much, because he's not about the grassroots at all. He hates the grassroots because he can't control it.
Well, Tex, a couple of things. I mean, we got to remember Woodward came into Washington during the Watergate thing, right? So, you know,
yeah.
Yes, he's definitely on the left side of the equation, but he's kind of a more moderate or sort of right-leaning liberal, and he does have some journalistic integrity, so I'm not surprised that he pointed it out. I mean, he doesn't say he agrees with, quote, Republicanism, but he did kind of encapsulate it way better than Karl Rove could. But I also noticed on that Hannity piece that you referenced, Karl Rove got all pissy and tried to distract from the issue by saying that the Tea Party had sent out an email with a picture of him dressed up as a Nazi, and that was all over the news, and people are making a big deal out of it. But here, because this guy's on the left, and he says that I'm a communist like the Politburo, no one mentions it. I mean, this is the kind of crap Karl Rove uses to distract you from the fact that everything that he does is to undermine you, Mr. and Mrs. Grassroots America. Back to you, Tex.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, here he comes up, but I can't believe I've been accused of being a Politburo member, and that becomes the issue, not what he's doing, not how his project is different. He then went on to say, we have very Spartan offices and all that kind of stuff. Like, nobody cares
how you furnish the office. It's what you do with it when you're in there. People care about the candidates that you're supporting and how you support those candidates and how you go after people who are in opposition and how you go after candidates that the party, the people who are actually part of the party, and remember, the party is to the church as the congregation is to the church. The grassroots is the congregation, and the congregation doesn't like the people that you're putting up. That's the problem, and you're going after and you're assassinating their character and going after them saying that they're bad people, and the people who support them are also bad people, and they're losers, and they have no chance, and you have to go with the guy who the big party donors support. But the reality is the big party donors don't really support these candidates. Karl Rove just tells them that these are the guys who can win, and they go get their money, and he goes and gets their money, tells them that these are the candidates who can win, and the grassroots will shut up and they'll fall in line because they have no other place to go. Well, they do have another place to go. It's called not to the polls on election day. And that's exactly what happened, and you don't win that way. And this is why he's got his ass in a sling with the big donors, because who's going to keep giving money to somebody who's making these big promises and is not delivering? That's a bad investment. Karl Rove is a bad investment.
He's terrible. He's not even really the investment, right? Isn't he kind of the investment manager? I mean, he's the guy that basically gets all the investors, the donors, to give him the money for his double crossroads GPS or whatever, you know, conservative assassination project. And then he goes out and he decides what's what and who's who. And that's what he's looking for. He's looking for a national, centralized clearinghouse to funnel the money towards his, as you said eloquently earlier, malleable candidates. And this is what will destroy pretty much any party, but especially one that's ostensibly for free markets, freedom of association, federalism, and such. And I think I think Newt really summed it up brilliantly when he was basically talking about, you know, you don't want a bunch of billionaires, you know, picking candidates across the nation, which, I mean, you know, who could argue with that? Actually, you know what? Tex, you know who Karl Rove reminds me of? He reminds me of Walter Peck. You remember Walter Peck? He was head of the EPA in New York at the time that Egon and Venkman and Ray were out there fighting rhinos or ghosts or whatever you want to call it. Let's just take a little listen.
The Ghostbusters are here, Mr. Mayor.
Ghostbusters. Okay, the Ghostbusters.
Hey, where's this Peck?
I am Walter Peck, sir, and I'm prepared to make a full report. These men are consummate snowball artists. They use sense and nerve gases to induce hallucinations. People think they're seeing ghosts. And they call these bozos who conveniently show up to deal with the problem with a fake electronic light show.
Everything was fine with our system until the power grid was shut off by Dickless here.
They caused an explosion. Is this true?
Yes, it's true. This man has no dick.
All right.
There it is. Is this true, Tex?
That, yes, quite true.
This man has no dick.
And that's the problem with Rove.
Yeah. I think that this is, you know, he's your typical pocket protector, little geeky guy. Nothing against geeky guys, I mean, if that's your thing. But, you know, he's been intimidated all his life, so now it's his chance to get back at all those people who put him down and were mean to him, right? This is his revenge. And his revenge is he's going to destroy this party by making himself rich at your expense, by giving you candidates who are going to do nothing but increase debt, increase foreign wars for the banks, that are going to basically turn the Republican Party into something more left than what the Democrats used to be. That's his revenge. It's Rove's revenge. And our job as Rove Busters here is, you know, to cross the streams and send this bitch back to hell. And you're our army, and you've got to do it.
Absolutely. And, you know, this guy's been telling us for years that the Tea Party is dead. They hit their high water mark because he thought he wrapped them up pretty good. When the Tea Party started coming around, he started funding local Tea Parties and getting them into the rhino trap so that then he could control that movement. I mean, he's
kind of diabolical in a way. So he's been announcing, well, the Tea Party's dead. Well, he just crossed the Tea Party with this whole movement, and now his organization is falling apart, and what he's trying to do is not successful. And there's blood in the water, and everybody senses it, and this is the guy who's had, you know, his knee on the neck of the Republican Party, and now his ass is in a sling, and it's all for the good. The sooner you can free this party of this guy, the better we're going to be. We'll find real candidates, real people who support limited government and the liberty movement, and we can get rid of this rhino virus that's been infecting the party from at least since 2000, when this guy started heading up all the activity.
Well, I mean, look, this guy's been heading up this kind of crap long before that, but I mean, he came to prominence by giving us, you know, look, seemingly a conservative Christian Texan Republican heir to Bush. That's what he delivered to us in 2000, and it was a spectacular victory, wasn't it? I mean, let me think what a landslide it was. It required how many votes of the nine justices to make sure that Bush won?
More than four.
I mean, that's his creds. That the Bush. And, I mean, who was Bush running against? Let's face it, Al Gore. I mean, like the most uninteresting of all the Democrats. At least Bill Clinton had some style, right? He could barely beat Al Gore. And then in 2004, you know, his spectacular, what, barely a victory against Kerry, who, if possible, is the only person less interesting than Al Gore. I mean, Kerry is so bad that Rand Paul actually voted to confirm him as Secretary of State just to get him out of the Senate. to get him out of the Senate. I don't want to work with this guy. Get him out. Put him in Department of State. You know? Yeah. So his record of success is all bullshit fed to us on Fox News. It's not real. He barely wins. The only success he has is in defeating authentic conservative candidates. Like, what was that you said? Nine major losses, two of which were, quote, allegedly Tea Party. That means that most of the losses were Rove's monsters, Rove's rhinos, okay? And he's telling us that he's successful?
Well, yeah, and even those two that he blames on the Tea Party, I would blame on him because he stopped supporting him with money and campaigns, so they were left without any sort of cover. Now, maybe that's a good thing given his, you know, record of failure in the other seven races, but they got outspent, you know? That's not to say that they didn't say dumb things, but, you know, if you're going to blame it on them, the RNC wasn't supporting them. They weren't getting support from the big political donors, and so they're left without cover. And then, okay, yeah, so they didn't do so hot. Well, what about your other seven guys? Well, I guess those are just your fault, right? Much like the other candidates that you, you tend to run for elections, they barely ever win. And when they do, it's always this narrow get-out-the-base type movement where you try to find the most divisive issues possible in order to get out the base so that you can win in a 50.2% victory over, you know, 49.8. Well, that's not how you win. Look at what Gingrich did with the Contract America. He was looking for 80-20 issues. What do 80% of the American people support? What do they want to see? And then people who don't pay a lot of attention to politics, they would listen to the radio and they'd say, you know, hey, I agree with that, you know? And, then the Democrats would scowl at Gingrich and say, oh, that's a terrible idea and all this kind of stuff. And people go, well, I don't know, I agree with that. And you win majorities that way. And then you have effective governing majorities. Karl Rove's get-out-the-base strategy is always for a victory of one vote over the other. Well, that's turn the whole thing over to a coin flip, and you don't win that coin flip very much. So Karl Rove's whole victory strategy, I think, is inherently flawed, and it's going to produce a lot of defeats.
Well, Texas, not only flawed, okay, it's completely overblown. His record of success is actually barely there. I mean, if he had to actually apply for this job and didn't have to get on his knees to keep it, no one would hire him because he's not that good. I mean, maybe he's good at, you know, greasing the elbows and swallowing the polls or whatever it does to get the money, but as far as winning races, he's just not that good. And certainly if you're a Ron Paul-type Republican or if you're a Newt Gingrich-type Republican – or even a Michelle Bachmann or Rick Santorum Republican. Rove's not your guy. And yet, y'all are out there beating the crap out of each other instead of beating the crap out of Rove. And what I need you to do is train your sights on Karl Rove and his ilk. And don't forget, there's a rules meeting coming up in April for the Republican Party in Los Angeles. You've got to get out there and you've got to make a push for this. You've got to go to your conventions. You've got to go to your meetings. And you got to make the noise and you got to go rhino hunting, because otherwise, if I have to hear one more time from, quote, Reagan-type conservatives how much of a libertarian Rand Paul is, and if I have to hear from libertarian purists how much of a sellout Rand Paul is, I'm going to friggin' explode. Quit beating up on Rand Paul. Quit beating up on each other. All the grassroots have to work together to evict these rhinos. Look, they're a very small minority faction. Well-heeled and well-funded, yes, and now the rules are tipped in their favor, okay? But we outnumber them unless we keep getting balkanized and going into our little, you know, cult of personality camps and bitching at everybody else instead of bitching at Rove and these guys. And read the article that Newt wrote in Human Events. It's by Gingrich, and it says why Rove and Stevens are plain wrong. And, Tex, I've got a four-minute clip. We're almost at the top of the hour, unless you've got something to throw in there.
Yeah, I was just going to say, if you tweet, the hashtag you want to use is Crush Rove.
That's hashtag CRUSHROVE. Make him feel the burn. Newt was on CBS. You want to hear Newt kind of?
Let's go.
All right, here it is.
I'm worried, Ray. It's getting crowded in there, and all my recent data points to something big on the horizon.
What do you mean, the big?
Well, let's say this Twinkie represents the normal amount of psychokinetic energy in the New York area. According to this morning's sample, it would be a Twinkie 35 feet long, weighing approximately 600 pounds.
That's a big Twinkie.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was the wrong clip. That was Newt talking about Rove. And I think, you know, Rove is a big Twinkie. But here's the clip, Newt, on CBS.
Former House Speaker Newt Gingrich says the federal government is so bloated, automatic budget cuts might actually be a good thing. And on another front, Gingrich is out this morning with a blistering critique of top strategists in his own party. Speaker Gingrich is with us now from Chicago. Good morning.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
You have said that billionaires and strategists should not be picking candidates and that they may have too much influence. Who are you talking about, and what did you mean?
Well, look, I was very specifically saying that in a newsletter people can get at GingrichProductions.com, that the idea Karl Rove has of creating some super PAC to go out and basically pick Republican Senate nominees, for example, is a terrible idea. We don't want to become a party in which a handful of political bosses gather up money from billionaires in order to destroy the candidates they don't like, and that's what we're talking about. When you get involved in these kind of primary fights, it's almost all negative advertising, and it's all by outsiders. I think this is a very dangerous model. The fact is, last year, we lost 9 U.S. Senate races that we could have won. There's some very deep rethinking we need to do as a party, but it isn't gathering up more money by Washington consultants for them to try to handpick across all 50 states the people they think should be in the U.S. Senate.
But are you also critical of the Koch brothers and the amount of money they spent in the 2012 election?
I'm not critical of people who get involved in the process between the two parties. If you're in a general election and both sides have access to a lot of resources, if you direct your resources against the other party, I'm very critical of the idea that you're going to start seeing people, and you see it, by the way, right here in Chicago, where Mayor Bloomberg of New York is spending millions of dollars to try to influence a Democratic primary here. There's something wrong. We need a campaign reform that really does allow the candidates to raise the money directly so the candidates can spend the money. And the rise of all these super PACs, I think, frankly, is very dangerous to the long-term health of our society.
I want Gail to get in here in just a moment, but you also are critical of the running of the 2012 campaign because you say they were not nearly as sophisticated in the techniques they used in understanding America and how to reach America.
Sure. Look, I think this is a very core problem of the Republican Party, and I decided to speak out because I do think Chairman Reince Priebus has moved us in the right direction by beginning to raise these questions, but I think a lot of our consultants are frankly just kidding themselves about how big the gap is. The Obama campaign today is about 8 years or 10 years ahead of the Republican Party in very fundamental effort to understand the country. This is a country which is, in many ways, younger, more Latino, more Asian American, more African American than Republican strategists are capable of dealing with. And as a result, in many ways, we're beginning to be non-competitive at the presidential level. We're doing great with governors. We have 30 governors with 315 electoral votes, but we're not doing well at the presidential level.
And what do you hope will come of your criticism? Are you hoping that they will engage you in conversation?
Look, I hope, first of all, that the major donors will think long and hard before they turn lots of money over to consultants who lost 9 Senate races last year that we could have won.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope, second, that the entire party will come to a conclusion that the Republican Party has to be capable of competing in all of America, in reaching out to every part of the American society, and in providing better solutions than the Democrats provide. You can't just be an opposition party. You have to be a party that has a better alternative to attract people to your side. This is what I did in the 70s and 80s and 90s, and you know, I'm back doing the same thing again. It's a little bit unfortunate, but I think it's a very important role for us, an argument for us to have inside the party.
Okay, before you go, you're in Chicago. You were with David Axelrod at the University of Chicago, who called you the godfather of gridlock. What do you say, Newt Gingrich, to people that see you as the guy who really set up this culture of gridlock that we're still in?
I say we passed welfare reform, which was the largest conservative social reform in your lifetime. We passed 4 consecutive balanced budgets. We got an awful lot done.
Speaker.
We were very tough, but we also got a lot done.
To be discussed at a further date.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning from Chicago.
Good to be with you.
Boom. There's Newtzilla. I mean, it's baffling to me that, you know, she had to get that dig there towards the end, you know, the whole he's the godfather of gridlock. I mean, you know, give me a break. He's not the godfather of gridlock, and he's not the guy that always said, you know, what was one of the things that the rhinos used to say? He's zany, and he's got all these ideas, right? You know, the Republican Party, like what Gingrich did or not, but, you know, the fact is that those 4 budgets that he, quote, balanced by Washington standards, I mean, government and accounting kind of are separate spheres of disciplines, okay? But they were the 4 most balanced budgets, and there were actually some cuts that we've seen in 6 or 7 decades. I mean, you know, so you got to give him credit for that. Was it far right enough? Was it truly fiscal to the point where we didn't have increasing debt and such? No, but before, you know, he was just getting started, and maybe if he had a Republican executive who was cooperative with him as Speaker, then we could have seen some stuff. But the rhinos made damn sure that he was gone before there was a, quote, Republican executive. So, you know, there's Newt laying it out for you, and it wasn't gridlock. What he did was he said no to Clinton's budget. He didn't fund it, okay? Little pussy John Boehner's funding everything Obama's doing. So if you want to know who the real bastard behind all the crap that Obama's doing, it's little Johnny Boehner, because he's got the purse, and he's giving him and his rhinos are giving Obama all the money. Newt shut the government down. Oh, it was controversial. Oh, everything's going to go crazy. Well, what that did was it brought Clinton to the negotiating table, and that's why things got done. And, you know, he did it, and now you've got the exact opposite with Boehner, Priebus, and Rove. And what are you all out there doing? Bitching about, you know, how non-libertarian the Republicans are, or how non-conservative the libertarians are. And it's just an insane fight. You got to learn to get along, look over your, even if there's significant differences, look over them, because grassroots conservatism / libertarianism is the only thing that is going to right this ship. And right now, you're
well, that's what the American people are. And if you're not there, you're just trying to be the same thing as the Democrat Party. And there's a lot of Democrats who don't go along with where the Democrat Party is going, and they're looking for an alternative. And so they tend to, you know, independent voters tend to play off the one party versus the other in the hopes that, well, overall this will balance itself. Well, the problem is that the two-party system is playing the exact same game, and going from one side to the other side isn't having an effect. And so there's this vast majority of Americans that's calling out for new leadership. And the Republican Party could provide this, but the current people running it, a la Karl Rove, are not providing it because they don't want to. And so this party, I think, needs to go to more limited
government fashion. We need to incorporate the Liberty Movement into the Republican Party and get back to fiscal sanity, a balanced budget, and return to constitutional government. And there, I mean, it's not much more complicated than that. There you have a winning coalition, a winning majority. The problem is that a lot of the people behind the party leadership, a lot of people with the money, the donors, don't want to see that because they're making bucks on the current system. But, you know, at a certain point, the parasites can overwhelm the host, and that's sort of the point that we're getting to. And so it's time to throw the current leadership out and get new leadership in, or it's time to, you know, do what the Romans did with the revolt of the orders, where, you know, they had the patricians and the plebeians, of course, being the senators, and the plebeians being the common people, and the plebeians did all the work for the patricians, but the patricians got all of the credit and the spoils, and the plebeians just decided, well, we're leaving the city of Rome, and they did. They pulled out, and they all left. And then the patricians realized, well, we can't do anything without the plebeians, and so they created the tribunes of the people who had the original veto power. But same thing with the grassroots of the Republican Party. The Karl Rove's of the world are nothing if you don't follow his orders, and we're no longer following his orders or his playbook. That was already demonstrated in the 2012 election. That's why he was apoplectic on Fox News that night. He couldn't believe that people hadn't turned out to vote for his rhino.
Yeah,
that was the first of the revolt of the orders. The plebeians left. Screw you. The grassroots got up. Yeah, go to hell. If that's your party, you know, fuck you. Then we're not part of it.
Yeah, fuck you, Carl. And here's the thing, right? You know, because of that meltdown, you know, Fox News put him in timeout for, you know, a little while, right? You know, they put him in timeout because of that argument he had with the, quote, election desk. And they did the same thing with Morris, plus both of them were, you know, out there as, quote, independent journalistic analysts, when in fact they're both running PACs. And so what do? They fire Morris, right? Fox News fires Morris, and they bring Rove back. Interestingly enough, now that they've brought, you know, little pissant Carl Rover over here, Rover the Roverian, back to Fox News, guess who is doing his first post-defeat interview on Fox News?
Oh, would that be Dick Morris, and would he be doing it on Sean Hannity?
It is not Dick Morris.
Oh.
It is a Dick. You're absolutely right, but it's not Dick Morris. It's Dick Romney. Mitt Romney. So, you know, obviously Fox News realized the revolt of the 10% loss in ratings, because at least 10% of, quote, fair and balanced listeners realized that it's nothing more than magic blondes and compromise analysts spewing bullshit about what, you know, conservatism really is, when in fact they're spreading the lies of rhinoism and neoconism. And so they decided to backpedal and punish, you know, and put him in timeout. They punished by firing Morris, but now they brought little Rover the Roverian back, and his monster from 2012 is going to make his first post-defeat interview on Fox News. You know, obviously they need to kind of sell the story that Romney was not the bad candidate. It was an issue of bad technology and not reaching out to people based on their skin color and genitals. That's nuts, because that's not what it is. The real conservative message of limited government, local autonomy, federalism, free markets, and a strong national defense, which really means Navy, Marines, and a well-regulated militia, those principles apply to people beyond their genitals, beyond their skin color. These are core philosophical principles. And one of my core philosophical principles as an American is I don't trust the government, and neither should you.
I aim to misbehave.
I always aim to misbehave. And frankly, I mean, if you really think about it, you know, what does government do? It's got some limited functions that are necessary, but for the most part these days, this overgrown leviathan that has been built by both the Republicans and the Democrats, Republicans like Rove, just gets in your way.
So does it happen a lot? Government commandeering your ship, telling you where to go?
That's what governments are for, getting in a man's way.
That was Captain Mal talking about governments getting in a man's way. And Tex, speaking of somebody who is a fellow browncoat and believes that the government gets in your way, we've got someone calling from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Joe Blaze, you are live with Tex and Rex. How you doing?
Hello, Tex and Rex.
Hey, Joe, you first represent. What's going on?
You were talking about change of leadership earlier, and I thought maybe I'd call in and let you know about our attempt to change our leadership in GOP in Michigan this past weekend.
Absolutely. Let's hear about it. What's going on?
Well, we ran a candidate, Bobby. Our candidate was Todd Kurtz, who's a very strong libertarian, constitutional libertarian, and we ran him against Bobby Shostak. And there were several things that happened there, Bobby being the incumbent. Several things
that happened. Also one of the guys, isn't Shostak one of the guys that voted for little clown Prince Pubic, too?
Oh, I'm sure he did, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They're all in the same group there. But to start out the convention, the conservative incumbent state chairman denied entrance to a delegation of open carry constituents or delegates. So the first thing they did at the convention was violate their own core principles of, you know, less regulation and Second Amendment arms by not allowing people to carry open carry sidearms in there, which was lawful and is very much accepted around here. So, and despite that, they are going to report here in Michigan that the report that the results were only 10-point swing is what they report, but I know for a fact, because I was actually working on the show on Todd Kurser's team. I don't know if you know Norm Hughes, I'm sorry. But I was working with him this weekend, and I know for a fact that there was less than 2 points between the Liberty Movement and the Establishment Movement. So it's within the margin of error. There's a 50-50 split in Michigan. Shostak came back and tried to, with the governor's help, coerce the challenger, Todd Kurtzer, into permitting the destruction of the ballots and keeping the results from public view. And
they wanted to destroy the ballot.
They tried to get Todd to allow him to destroy the ballot they came up with a different number. It's about a 10-point swing that they're reporting through, I'm not really sure how it works, but I was aware of it before, the modified unit rule. They did something after the voting. They tried to instill this other rule, the modified unit rule, which then allowed the empty delegate slots to be filled proportionally with votes as voting delegates. And if that would have happened...
They're going to pack the vote. They're going to stuff the ballot. That was
right, they would have stuffed the ballot. They won anyway. They were going to retroactively stuff the ballot box to show a bigger win because they didn't win. You know, they only won by about 1.7%, which is, I'm sure, within the margin of error, which then essentially makes it 50-50. Our party is split 50-50, and they're not happy about it, but we are.
Absolutely.
They spent, I've got reports that they spent $300,000 and we only spent $10,000. So we didn't work half, one half as hard as them financially, but probably just as hard or harder just hitting the people up and telling the truth.
I think Eisenhower called that you got more bang for your buck.
Yeah, well, we got a lot more bang for our buck. And you know what? That $300,000 that Kurtzer or that Shostak, the incumbent, spent was probably, there was a at least some percentage of it was taxpayer dollars. And none of ours was taxpayer dollars. And, in fact, that's one of the hot-button issues that we had was a taxpayer-funded primaries. And obviously, Shostak favors the current system because what it is now is the primary system, and the caucus system would much more favor the getting the actual fair information out there.
Joe, as Deep Throat taught us, follow the money. And it's very true. I mean, we had the same thing here in the Commonwealth. You've got conservative Attorney General Ken Cuccinelli, who was going to run for governor, and then the Rhino Lieutenant Governor Bill Bowling. Bowling and his Rhinos were pushing for a primary, but at the convention last year, we went with a convention instead. And so what happened to Bowling? He dropped out because he knows in a convention with real grassroots people, he's got no shot. Now he's considering running again as an independent against the Republican. So here's the lesson learned. It's okay for Rhinos to run as independents against Republicans, but it's not okay for conservatives and libertarians to run against Rhinos. That's the double standard, and that comes from Rove. And when you mentioned what you spent to win versus what they spent to lose, that's exactly what Rove did in 2012 with his monster. He made a lot of money doing it, but Republican voter money and donor money was pissed away. He's a shitty investment manager because he's selling you an investment that is a lie, because he's selling Rhinos and neocons to conservatives and libertarians. What you were selling was an honest message, and that's what wins. So when they talk about, you know, how do you appeal to Asians and young people and women and Latinos and blah, 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 you appeal to them by being honest. And as Ron Paul always said, integrity matters. That's how you win. That's a great example.
Well,
this is the same thing that they did with Charlie Crist, right? Remember, Marco Rubio knocked off Charlie Crist, and then Charlie Crist ran as an independent. And then, of course, eventually revealed that, oh, yeah, by the way, I'm actually a Democrat. I don't know why I was in your party in the first place. But this happens on and on during the election. So I leave Murkowski up in Alaska. She lost. She ran not on the Republican ticket and, you know, had a write-in campaign. And, you know, the rest is history there. But if libertarian-minded people who are in the party, they get shafted by the Rove machine, if they go their own route, oh, yeah, see, they're bad, terrible conservatives. But when it happens the other way, well, they're still good people, and, you know, they're protected. And that's the problem with the party, is because the grassroots doesn't support those types of candidates. And so, you know, but the party rolls out the red carpet for them and gives them all the media coverage in the world, and then they wonder why the grassroots is disaffected, why most of the country thinks that the country's heading in the wrong direction. And it's about time that we start getting rid of these people. And when you see someone who's weak, particularly, you know, the big kahuna, Chief Wagga Wagga, Karl Rove up there teetering or swimming around in the pool, leaving a trail of blood, you know, it's time for the sharks to go after him and get rid of the guy, and massively diminish his influence within the party so the next generation can take over and just let him know we're not going in a Rhino direction. The future of this party is heading away from a centralized government towards decentralization. The future is heading more towards the liberty movement, and for those people who are suspicious of Ron Paul and think he has some, you know, kooky ideas here or there, at least heading in that direction is better than heading in the Democrat direction, moving away from state control and moving towards limited government is better. So at least start paddling in that direction. And then, you know, if you go too far down the path and start paddling in the other direction if you want to, but at this point, it's time to lock arms and start getting away from the Karl Rove of the party for heading us towards this state-centralized method. I mean, look at how the guy wants to choose the candidates, for God's sakes. He wants to choose them out of Washington, you know, so the people of Missouri won't get to pick who represents Missouri. Karl Rove will decide that in Arlington, Virginia. You know, this is a problem, and this is how all of their solutions work. They're Washington-driven.
Yep.
It's a Washington solution to a Washington problem. Well, Washington has a vested interest in the problem. Washington doesn't have an interest in solving the problem. They have an interest in perpetuating the problem so that they can always have a fresh crop of people who can come and, quote, solve this problem, even though they have no intention of doing so. So you got to focus on going after Rove, and you have to unite with the rest of the party and link arms up with the liberty movements and make sure that we get the grassroots in control of this party so that we can start moving the country itself in the right direction. I mean, you talk to people across the country all the time, whether, you know, conservative, whether they're Democrats, whether they're libertarians, or just plain disgusted
They all think Washington has too much influence. They all think that Washington doesn't govern in the interest of the people, and they want to see less Washington in their lives. Let's head in that direction, and let's get rid of people taking us in the wrong direction. And, you know, the first you get a strike while the iron is hot, and the best place to start is with Karl Rove.
Yeah, I mean, Karl Rove is definitely the one that you've got to go after. And Tex, you brought up something. You mentioned Rubio and Crist, right, where Crist becomes the Democrat. Well, that's what makes Rubio look like a conservative. But you have to ask yourself if he is. And, you know, people who voted for Rubio want to think that he is, but and his voting record is very similar to Rand Paul's. But interestingly, David Brody asked him, this is to Mark Rubio, do you think this conservative victory project is a good idea? Rubio's response, now conservative victory project is the Orwellian named conservative assassination team that Roe was putting together, right? And so, and the one that Newt so wonderfully ripped apart. So this is Rubio's response. Yes, I think they're fine. I want to say a couple of things in fairness. Karl Rove was one of my earliest supporters. Even when I was 30 points down in the polls, he wrote me a check. He told people he was supporting me. He helped me in my race, and I was 30 or 40 points down. That's important for fairness to say that. Ultimately, when I was the nominee, American Crossroads, that's American Double Crossroads because that's Karl Rove's PAC, came into Florida and spent a lot of money on my candidacy, and we're grateful for that. By the same token, I would not have been elected without Tea Party support. I would not have had a chance to win the primary without all these folks out there who rallied to the cause of defending our Constitution, limited government, supporting our traditional values, and I'm forever grateful for that as well. They both have a place in American politics, meaning you foolish, conservative, Constitution-loving Tea Party people, I can talk the talk because, remember, he wasn't really, you know, he didn't have much of a record, so he can talk the talk without having a record. And then, you know, I can rip apart Newt Gingrich by lying about him in the primary to support Rhino Romney. Why? Because Karl Rove gave me this money, so I got to support his monster. And then I can ignore indefinite detention and American assassination by drone on American soil at the president's command because, really, I'm not as much of a Tea Party person as much as I need the Tea Party to win. At the end, he says, we're all on the same team. We're all working for the same goal. I think we need to take a deep breath and understand that at the end, what we all want is to elect the most conservative people possible to come up here, fight to defend the Constitution, protect our liberties, and move our country forward. Fuck you, Marco, because all that bullshit you're talking about the Constitution, you're for indefinite detention, you're for drone strikes on American soil, and you're going to lie about Speaker Newt Gingrich in order to push Romney on us. I mean, even the most ardent Ron Paul people that I know who would have preferred Newt Gingrich to Mitt Romney. So this is complete crap, and this is what you get when people in the Tea Party, Campaign for Liberty, libertarians, conservative, Ron Paul supporters, maybe people who went to Gary Johnson, we're all fighting with each other about the nitpicky little things as opposed to building coalitions. This is the kind of crap that you get. And speaking of coalitions, gentlemen, we are joined by someone who's building coalitions on Blog Talk Radio and Facebook, and that is from Coalition of Freedom. We have with us
Caveman!
Supreme by the teenage.
All right, Captain Caveman, you are live with Joe Blaze of Tex and Rex.
Oh, gentlemen, and I say that lightly, except Joe.
Hey.
You know, it's interesting because I was I came in late, and I have to apologize, and I've been listening and in chat a little bit. But, you know, I think sometimes people wonder, why are we still on the Rove issue? And that was actually a comment that I had going on with somebody. And I think it's important to understand that this battle, what Rove represents, because he goes all the way back to Reagan losing to Ford. He was out there on the convention floor, you know, convincing delegates to vote for Ford, who went on to lose to Carter. And he has a long career and I don't want to say a long distinguished career, but he has
Wasn't Ford the most conservative candidate who could win?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
right.
No, he was.
I think I think he was the most conservative candidate who could fall down and hand us over to Jimmy Carter.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think that for me, the reason that I stay focused on the Roe issue is because it is the classical battle that we are fighting. And one thing that hit me as you guys were conversing earlier was, I believe, one of the main reasons that Fox has him on is to keep this battle going, and it's good for their ratings. Because otherwise,
well, it's not good for their ratings. They're 10 points down in the ratings because they're liars.
Well, maybe they're reaching. But you understand what I'm saying. In other words, why is he still there? I mean, it's amazing. He's supposed to be an analyst, but he's on there defending himself every time he talks. And you're like, well, I mean, he's getting paid to defend himself. Why? Well, you know why? Because they want that battle. They want this argument between conservatives and, Paul Liberty Movement people and libertarians. They want to demonize them. I find it interesting in the news as the Rubio Rand discussion comes up, because it's battling the double R battle, and you see it all the time. Every time Rand is in the news, Rubio's in the news. Rand's in the news, Rubio's in the news. Then Karl Rove gets up and defends himself. That's really what's going on right now. It's huge.
I think Rubio doesn't like this juxtaposition of himself with Rand. I think Rubio's a bit more uncomfortable. So you saw in that thing where he was talking about, look, I have to be honest, Karl Rove was one of the first people to cut me a check for, my candidate. Well, how big was that check? What are we talking about, $30 here? He covered your lunch. What's going on, And then later on, America Crossroads really helped me out and all that kind of stuff. But I couldn't have done it without Tea Party support. So you see, he's clearly, threading the needle. He does not want to be in the middle of this fight. He doesn't like it, but, he's having greatness thrust upon him. And, we'll see where it goes. But, I don't really see Rubio as a big fighter. I think he doesn't want to be part of that battle. He just wants to be a senator.
Yeah, he just wants to be a senator. He's not much of a fighter. You know why he's not much of a fighter? Because he's like Walter Peck.
Is this true?
Yes, it's true. This man has no dick.
And that's why Karl Rove gave him money. You can see that I'm having a little bit of fun with our Rove Busters, Ghostbusters team tonight, but, you got to entertain yourself while you're talking about this stuff or you shoot yourself in the face.
Yeah,
the giant marshmallow man.
Well, he was the most malleable Republican that Karl Rove could control, and so
is he the gatekeeper?
He's Vince Clortho. Rubio's Vince Clortho, the key.
Yeah.
He's the
gatekeeper.
He's the key master.
The key master. That's right.
Yeah. Sigourney Weaver's the gatekeeper.
Yeah, that's right. I'm sorry.
Yeah, there you go. But you know what? I got to hear that again, Tex, because that's brilliant. What was Rubio to Rove?
He was the most malleable conservative that Karl Rove could control, and therefore he gets support.
Oh, nice shooting, Tex.
And I keep hammering that point, okay, because people, you really need to understand that. I mean, we're talking about Rove. Last week we talked about Rubio and Rand, okay? These are just kind of proxy, current, contemporary, at the moment examples that we're giving you for what Tex just brilliantly pointed out, which is an overarching theme. It is a snow job on all of you, whether you're, Ron Paul Republicans, Gingrich Republicans, Bachland Republicans, Johnson Libertarians, I don't care. It's a snow job on all of you. Because Rove is not—he's cheating. Okay, Buckley said the most conservative candidate who can win. Okay, meaning that you don't want somebody who's got a checkered past or an inability to campaign and communicate, but you want them to actually be conservative. Okay, Rove is turning that into what Tex just pointed out: people who can talk conservative but are actually completely flexible to do whatever his bidding is, and his bidding is that of the corporatists who fund Crossroads GPS and the Conservative Assassination Project. Back to you, Tex.
Well,
don't forget, Joe's still here.
Yeah. Oh, Joe, hop in anytime. I just want to throw some gasoline on the fire. So this comes from an article, I think that you were actually quoting from earlier, talking about Marco Rubio and stating that Roe supported him, but says that Rubio still teaches a class at Florida International University, no big scandal there, but he said he was telling his students how politics really works. The topic was the Florida House of Representatives, and he didn't need notes to explain when the legislative body he once led is so partisan and polarized. Quote, so this is what he said, quote, if you know the only way to lose your seat is to get out conservative in a primary, you'll never let anyone get to your right, Rubio said. I'm not telling you this is how it should be, he said with a grin, but it's how it is. This isn't a good government class. This is a politics class. So perhaps he's showing his cards a bit. Perhaps he's talking off the cuff. You never know. But here he is stating that, well, when you're running, you got to run as a conservative, and you can't let anybody get to your right. But when you govern as a rhino, which is what Karl Rove is telling. So, you know, but you look at those two speeches that were given, Rand Paul giving one and Rubio giving the other, and I think Rand Paul was clearly more confident. He believed exactly what he was saying because it hadn't been vetted, you know, nine ways to Sunday, and he was speaking from his heart and what he actually believed, whereas Rubio is being handled, and that's what makes me nervous. Not that I think Rubio's a bad guy or I have anything against him. I don't necessarily like the people behind Rubio. And they keep saying, Rubio's the kind of conservative that we need to see. He's the future of the Republican Party because he appeals to Hispanics and the Hispanic vote. We have to capture the Hispanic vote. Well, spoiler alert, there's no real such thing as the Hispanic vote, okay? It just doesn't exist. There, because you have Mexicans in this country down here in Texas. That's where our Hispanics tend to come from. Overwhelmingly is from Mexico because we're right next to it. And Florida has Cubans. Well, Mexicans and Cubans have completely different sets of interests for the most part. They don't identify, I'm a Hispanic, you're a Hispanic, you know, and so now we're all in this big Hispanic group. They have different sets of identity, much like when European immigrants started coming here. Irish weren't looked upon favorably by English and German settlers. Italians weren't looked at. I mean, you have all these sort of, this potpourri of people coming together, and then if you look at, Marco Rubio, since he's Cuban, he's going to appeal to the Hispanic vote. We'll look at the same treatment that they give Ted Cruz, who's also Cuban and from Texas. They don't like him. You know why? Because he's speaking conservative, and that really is the problem. So this thing, it's a bogus argument that Marco Rubio's Cuban background is going to appeal to Hispanics. That's just a rationalization to get you to think that, don't worry, we've cracked the code. What they have is a malleable conservative who they're molding to be their next guy. And what they don't like about Ted Cruz, who has a similar background, is they don't like his conservative credentials. And he's a stand-up guy. And he's standing up, and every time he stands up, they keep trying to knock him down. You should be able to see this pattern. It should be visible in front of you and easy to understand. I mean, most plainly seen in the Rubio-Ted Cruz contrast. So, you know, and rumors of the Tea Party's demise is overstated because here you have Rand Paul basically heading up the Tea Party movement. You know, he's sort of the crown fell to him, or the mantle, I guess, not really the crown, but the mantle of his father came to him. And he's out there, I think, doing a fairly good job leading this movement, but also trying not to irritate the mainstream Republican Party in ways that his father did previously, whether justified or unjustified. And now you have that Tea Party is so strong and the Liberty Movement so strong, you have Karl Rove ducking for cover behind Rand Paul when Bob Woodward attacks him on TV. So I think it's a pretty interesting dynamic that you see.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's strange times. But, I mean, the question you have to ask yourself is, you know, who does Rand Paul appeal to? Because he's not Cuban or Mexican. I guess he's getting us the physician's vote or the ophthalmologist vote. I mean, I'm not sure, because if we're going to start, you know, that's how silly this whole thing is. You know, Rand Paul appeals to people who are actually conservative. And I know that he's getting some criticism for being, you know, quote, the word you use, malleable. He's not. Okay, there's a difference between being malleable, which means compromising your principles to go along to get along, which is what I strongly suspect Rubio is doing, versus picking and choosing your battles. You know, I heard a lot of people come down hard on Rand Paul for why did he vote for Kerry's getting appointed to the Secretary of State. That's not a battle he was going to win, and frankly, it's not a battle that he even needed to fight. Does it really make a difference if Obama's Secretary of State is Hillary Clinton, John Kerry, you know, or any of the other liberal Mickey Mouse losers? No, it doesn't make a difference. So why are you going to beat up on Rand Paul for that when Rand Paul was up there protecting the power of the jury? Rand Paul is up there talking about actual spending cuts. Rand Paul delivered a awesome response to Obama's stupid
Benghazi.
Yeah, and Benghazi. Rubio couldn't deliver it, and it's not just because, you know, like Tex said last week, someone put his water on a footstool. It's because he's scripted. He is trying to appeal to Tea Party-type conservatives when, in fact, he has no core. He'll do whatever the guys in charge want him to do. And if you really think about it, you know, the Democrats seem to have this lock on, quote, the minority vote. And so the Republicans are attributing their loss to, you know, the fact that Obama's and the Democrats have this lock on the minority vote. That's why we lost. No, Carl, you fucking lost because Romney is not a Republican or a conservative. That's why you lost. You lost because of Romney. All right, bringing him back to tell us that he was the right choice, but we just couldn't message properly to ethnics and young people and women, that's bullshit. You lost because Romney is terrible, and he's terrible because he has no conservative principles. The true mantle of who represents the minorities truly belongs to a conservative Republican Party, because the most glaring minority is not Latinos, Asians, blacks, whites, or anything else, okay, or women or whatever. The most glaring minority is the individual, right? Whether you're black, white, Cuban, Mexican, Guatemalan, Korean, I don't care where your national origin or ethnic background is, whether you're Catholic or Lutheran or Christian, evangelical, or Muslim or Jewish, it doesn't matter. What matters is that you're an individual who has their own identity, and they want to, you want to, you know, make your way in the world. You want a fair shot. You want equal representation before the law. You want equal opportunity, and you want to choose your own destiny. That's what the Republican Party is supposed to stand for. That's what the Republican Party says that it stands for. But guys like Rove keep forcing candidates down our throat who don't believe in this shit, and they play these collective identity politics. It is a game that the Democrats have been playing successfully for a long time. You can't outplay them on that turf. Appeal to people in truth. Go, Tex.
Well, the thing is, he gets defeated. So he tries to run a rhino and say, Barack Obama is so bad. I mean, well, let's go revisit 2008. George Bush is so unpopular, we have to run a rhino in order to appeal to the center of the country to show that we're coming back and we've got the message, okay? Then that doesn't work. So then now the new narrative becomes Barack Obama is so unpopular and so bad for the country that we have to run a rhino because we can't risk being defeated. We can't run a conservative. It's always a bad time to run a conservative. And then when that rhino loses, the narrative isn't, hey, this rhino shit doesn't work. You know, the narrative becomes, oh, no, the problem is, we're not enough like the Democrats, so now we have to adopt Democrat Party politics, whole cloth, and go into the whole group identity politics thing, because that's the problem with the Republican Party. Not that we keep running these rhinos that everybody hates and keeps saying that they hate and they don't want to see and that they don't support. The problem is that we're not the Democrat Party. Karl Rove will never be happy until he convinces Nancy Pelosi to become a Republican.
Wait, well, he got Boehner to run as a Republican.
He slimed me.
Yeah, exactly.
Dude, that last comment, man.
He slimed me.
don't ever say that again. I mean, you know, look, say what you want about John Boehner. And I don't like the guy. You know I don't like the guy. I think he's a useless piece of beef jerky. But if Karl Rove ever succeeds in making that witch a Republican, it's over. I mean, it literally is just there is no hope for anything. So let's not ever give him that idea again, okay?
he's been doing it.
Yeah, we're in the last 20 minutes of live air, and I would like to hear from Joe, and then we'll go back to text.
Uh-oh, Joe. We lost Joe. We've lost R2.
All right, well, then Trot, you want in?
Well, I was my mind was popping on some of the things that Tex was saying, and I think it's important to understand that the battle for the – we're not battling over the soul of this party. We are the soul of this party. And what it is we're battling against infiltration of the party. That's the difference. It isn't this group and that group have evolved together and now we're battling over, you know, which sibling becomes the anointed, you know, the next crown prince. That's what people don't understand. This is an infiltration, not unlike the communist infiltration into the politics in this country. That's what we're battling. But you said something earlier, and I think it was I just lost my train of thought. You guys are going to have to talk for a minute. I'll have to come back on this one. I had a really great point. Sorry.
Well, see, well, you know, you lost your train of thought, okay, because of the idea that Roe was going to bring Nancy Pelosi into the Republican Party, and you know we have to blame for that one.
Oh, nice shooting, Tex.
But then, Tex, you're going to have to pick up the slack here until Trog gets his bearings.
My God.
Well, that's the problem. The party has been infiltrated. It's been infiltrated by either Democrats cum Republicans or by Washington establishment types that don't see any sort of difference between the Democrat Party, which, you know, let's be honest, is the normal or the regular governing majority of the United States up until, you know, since World War II or since the 30s, up until Newt Gingrich came along and he fixed it. And actually, Rex, in that interview that you played, Gingrich talked about this where, mm-hmm. you know, I brought the Republican Party into a congressional majority, and he said it's disappointing now that we have to go back and try to, you know, recreate the magic that made this happen because the Republican Party has lost its way. I would submit that it hasn't lost its way. It's just succumbed to the people within its ranks that were always party establishment people that were always happy being backbenchers, not getting any notice, mm-hmm. and quietly collecting checks and getting money on the side. And that's what they want to go back and do. They don't care about governing. Because if they govern, they're going to govern against the Washington establishment because what is, if you have one party that's the party of government, you have to have a party that's opposed to that, a party of, hey, we don't support the big government. But the people who run the, quote, you know, anti-government party actually think, hey, this is a pretty good deal for me. So I'm going to go up and say, hey, I think this big government stuff's terrible. Meanwhile, I have to not actually throw much of a break in front of it in order to stop it. And so our party is infiltrated with people who've been in Washington too long and who like the current system. They'll give you all the rhetoric that you want in order to go vote for them. But if they do manage to get into power, when they do, they're not going to govern the way you want because they don't have a problem with this system. And that really is the problem,
right.
The infiltration by the white insiders. And this is why Karl Rove forms his, quote, victory project, because he wants to make sure that the grassroots doesn't come up and actually take over the party and give people in Washington who shut off the funds. And let's talk about the funds. Where does that come from? It comes from your paycheck. All this is your money. Your money and everybody you ever drive down, you drive past in traffic, everyone you walking down the street you look at, it's all of our money, and it's going to Washington, and it's going to the coffers of Karl Rove and the like, and into Washington in order to fund this machine that is just stealing money from you and throwing it down rabbit holes and into their own pockets. That's what the grassroots is trying to stop. And I think every American, regardless of their, you know, political identity, would agree that that's the case and that's what's going on. But the thing that they have to do is create these rhetorical differences between the two parties, lest the two sides ever actually get together, unite, and realize, screw this big government solution. We need to have the American people reassert control over the government and go shut this shit down because it's killing the country. And Karl Rove is in charge of the party that's most likely to engender that type of movement, and he is trying to play it like a Stradivarius in order to shut that down so it doesn't happen, because the good times keep rolling up in Washington while the rest of us troll along with 20% unemployment and a diminishing standard of living while Karl Rove's bank account continues to grow and grow and grow. Yeah.
And that's, look, this is all symptomatic of corporatism, right? The corporations and the banks have essentially turned the government into their tool to quash competition, to fabricate consumers. I mean, if anybody here thinks for a second that the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, called Obamacare, is essentially about insuring people who are on, you know, were without insurance, that is not the case. It is about fabricating, you know, 40 million mandatory new customers for the corporations that drafted the bill. When you've got this kind of a system, they will, they've taken over the government in order to eliminate market competition. What makes you think that they're going to allow money to flow towards political competition? And that's why you have this consolidation of power, and that's why you have duopoly. That's why both parties do the same crap. And Rand Paul spoke about this clearly. He goes, there's no difference up here on Capitol Hill in foreign policy. You can see it, right? The media plays this game, right? Bush, Rove's first rhino, right, starts the wars, right? And then we get, you know, the Patriot Act and all these other police state measures, which don't keep you safe from terrorists. They only eliminate your liberty at the, quote, providing by providing you security. And what happens? The left goes apeshit, and they're all anti-war. You know, Bush lied, people died, and end the wars and all this stuff. And then in Bush's third term, right, which is Obama's first term, who does more police state actions and increases and expands the wars to other countries, even more illegal undeclared wars. And now, of course, the war has come home because there's drones flying over these United States, and you can be the target, okay? Everybody on the left is quiet. There's no difference in the policy. Obama has only put Bush's shitty policies on steroids. Why is Rove upset about that? Well, because he's not making money on what Obama's doing. So he wanted to put his guy in there. He wanted Romney, his fucking little monster from 2012, to be serving Bush's fourth term. But he screwed up so badly by alienating us, because at least 10% of us woke up, okay, that now it's Obama serving Bush's fourth term. Well, Rove wants Bush's fifth term. And he's going to pick the guy to do it, whether it's Jeb Bush or Marco Rubio or whatever other rhino he has. Yeah, okay, he come out and said that, you know, people like Rand Paul. Yeah, he's going to pander to Rand Paul in order to bring you back in, right, to bring you back in. But you watch, with these rules that they've got going, Rove can crush Rand Paul in a heartbeat unless you make them feel such pain. And I'm not advocating Rand Paul for 2016. We're so far from 2016. Quit fucking thinking about 2016. I'm just simply saying that these people have all the tools, the power, and the rules now, okay, to completely obliterate any voice of conservatism, constitutionalism, libertarianism, whatever you want, unless it becomes untenable. Because no matter how much money they spend, and no matter how much crap they spew on CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News, if you're awake and you're informed and you bring others with you and you're not going to vote for this crap, even if it means you get another 4 years of a guy like Obama, that's when they'll realize, oh, shit, we've lost this thing. But that is never going to happen as long as you're at each other's throats over minor things like, oh, you voted third party instead of supporting the Republican candidate. I want nothing to do with you. Oh, you're a crazy Ron Paul supporter. You're a pot-smoking conspiracy kook. Oh, you like Newt Gingrich. You're one of them neocon bastards. As long as you all are doing that, Rove and his minions will win. You've got to get together because it's about the Constitution, and it's about your liberty. And it is about you determining the kind of life you want, because you sure as shit aren't going to get that under any kind of Democrat. And as of right now, you're not getting it under any Republicans. But keep in mind that for the last 40 years, you had one serious constitutionalist. That was Ron Paul. Today, you've got at least a dozen up there. It's not enough, but it's a start. If it occurs... Go ahead.
Is the liberty movement growing, or is the rhino movement growing? I think the Republican Party is doing
disastrously. It's on its back. It's fractured worse than it's ever been fractured. And why is it fractured? Did Ronald Reagan fracture it? Did Newt Gingrich fracture it? Did Ron Paul fracture it? No. It was the movement towards rhinoism that caused all these problems, the movement away from what the party claimed to actually believe in, not rhetorically, because rhetorically they all seem to agree. The movement is practical. Once they get in power, they do the exact opposite. That's what's breaking the party apart, not the movement for liberty. The movement for liberty is growing, and that's the direction the party needs to go in. That's where the youth vote is. That's where all the vote is across the country. Go talk to anybody. You know, go talk to people in the Democrat Party. When the Department of Homeland Security was created, what were people on the left saying? They're like, oh, my God, this thing is a major invasion to privacy. And what were most Republicans saying? Because, oh, well, it's George Bush. He's a Republican. I'm a Republican. So I support it. I think it's a good idea. Now what are Republicans saying? Hey, this TSA thing is pretty out of control, right? Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. Who was supporting it when it was put in place? This is the problem. It's that you have this difference of these two stupid teams that you're caught up in because you're looking at the jersey and you're not paying attention to the politics. And if you look now at the Republicans, they're going and they're blaming Egypt and the rise of the Muslim Brotherhood and Syria and all this kind of stuff on Barack Obama. Okay, well, go look at Condoleezza Rice's speech in 2005.
That's right.
She went over there and she gave a speech. She talked about democracy in Egypt. Okay, that's what you got. You got democracy in Egypt. And when Republicans were doing it, we supported it, and now the Democrats are in control. Oh, this is the worst thing that could ever possibly happen. But guess what? If George Bush were president right now, you'd be supporting it, and there would be some spin on it that would make it. It's the same thing. This is what Rand Paul is saying. There's no difference in Washington on foreign policy. There isn't a difference in Washington on foreign policy. They're in agreement on foreign policy.
It's the all
differences
neocons.
Are rhetorical.
Yeah.
The differences are all rhetorical, and people are going for it hook, line, and sinker. And the last narrative that they want is, hey, this crap is too expensive. It doesn't get us anything. It irritates the world. It makes us a lot of enemies, and we don't have any money, and it's getting Americans killed. Why don't we not do this stuff?
See, there you go. Now you're making sense.
Yeah. Or if you do this stuff, choose your battles. Do it in a limited area where it makes the most sense.
And you can actually win a decisive victory.
But that's crazy. That's Ron Paul. That's just nuts. We should be invading every place on planet Earth. You know, money grows on trees. Well, actually, it does in the Federal Reserve. It only grows in the form of debt with interest.
Yeah. These days, it's just bits and bytes. Gentlemen, we are in the last 7 minutes of show, so I want you to strap on your proton packs and give me some final thoughts. We'll see if Joe's there, and then we'll go to Chris, then my illustrious co-host Tex, and then we'll bring it back to me. So why don't we start with Joe Blaze? Are you with us? Okay, Chris, to you. You got two. Just under 2 minutes.
No problem. I think that you guys are nailing it because, you know, you started out with the robe discussion and it's evolved into what the core of the issue really is. And, you know, I actually saw a video of a guy quite a while ago that said he saw documents back in the Bush era that outlined all these countries that we're toppling and replacing the regimes in. I mean, people just don't get this, and I've said this for a year straight. Obama is just a symptom of the problem. He is not the problem. This system was put in place a long time ago, and people have got to get together, whether it's libertarians, Paul Liberty Movement, conservatives, new people, whatever, need to get, and you said it perfectly, need to get off these little issues and get focused on winning, because that is, I mean, if you want to look at a party of diversity, look at the Democratic Party. They have 10 times the different groups than the GOP does. The GOP's got two or three in comparison to theirs, and yet they are focused on winning. And that is, and if we don't get that right, and that's something that, you know, and I like to put up the old Newt analogies when he was talking about
in 2009. I think he was talking about right when the Tea Party rose. He had that speech, and I've posted it numerous times over the last year, when he outlined what we need to do to go into 2010, 2012, and what it would take to win. I know you guys have probably seen that speech. But when you go back and listen to this, and you listen to what Newt is saying now, or you listen to his letter to Karl Rove, which probably nobody there read, you know, he's had this figured out for a long time. He had it figured out in the 90s. That's how we got a Republican majority in 94, and that's how the first time since the 20s, Republicans had won again back-to-back. And that was a multi-year strategy put into place. And if people just get off of these little things and start listening to these people who understand this game, and people start coalescing together, we're going to win. And it starts with 2014, which, whether anybody likes to hear this or not, 2014 is next year. This election season's already, for next year, is already being prepped right now. They're deciding who's going to win, where the money's going to come from, you know, getting all the machines in place. You know, just because you're tired of politics, it doesn't mean that it isn't going on. It's happening now. So it is time to have this discussion. Anyway, that's my input.
All right. Thanks, Chris. Check Chris out, Coalition of Freedom on Facebook and Blog Talk Radio.
We came, we saw, we kicked its ass.
All right, Tex, to you, you've got a minute and a half to wrap up. Go.
All right, well, just to take where Chris left off, yeah. Well, you're tired and so you're not paying attention, but they're paying more attention now because they know you're not looking. So this is when they start, you know, running the freight train through and they slow it down closer to election time and they come up with a few outstanding issues that you can fight about later. But right now, all the trucks are moving. They got shipments of bullshit legislation that's got to get through Washington, stuff you hate and that you'll be railing against later, but right now you're not paying attention. So, you know, that's a big part of the problem, people not paying attention. But, you know, what Chris was saying about, you know, this foreign policy agenda, they saw papers back during the Bush administration that supported all this stuff. Yeah, it was all published in a book. It's called An End to Evil by David Frum. So go check that out. I read it back in the day, and it talks about how to get rid of all these horrible governments overseas that are doing all these terrible, nasty things to us and supporting terrorism and all that kind of thing. And, well, it's being implemented. And it doesn't matter which party you are. Once you come into office, this is the foreign policy. Hi, Mr. President-elect. Welcome to Washington. Here's your foreign policy. This is what we're doing. And thank you for getting on board. And there's not really a question. And that's why people like who talk about scaling back some of our overseas commitments are just completely marginalized and they can't get through the primary process because the, quote, Politburo, to quote Bob Woodward, won't let those people through because they'll never be approved as candidates. And it's kind of like the Iranian system where they have the Council of Guardians who decides who are the viable and legitimate candidates who you can vote on to run for president and who's outside the norm, and therefore their names are never entered into the ballot or contention. Here in the U.S., it's not as obvious. They are entered into the ballot and into contention. They're just derided and ridiculed until nobody would even consider voting for them, even though, let's face it, John Kerry has far more to deride and criticize him for than most. He's a Vietnam War veteran. How many people went to Vietnam, for God's sakes? How many people were sent over? That's a big credential? You know? Oh, God, I was in Vietnam. Most of that generation was in Vietnam. They got caught up in it. Something called the draft, you know, whether you wanted to go or not, you kind of ended up over there, unless you pulled some strings. So, anyway, this is the battle of the day. This is what we're dealing with. And until people can face that the leadership of the Republican Party is the Washington establishment, and the Washington establishment is big government, meaning the anti-government party, the conservative party, is being led by big government people saying anti-government things. Therefore, in order to continue to say anti-government things credibly, they have to remain in the minority, which is why you continue to lose. You're not going to understand what's going on. So it's time to get rid of this leadership. And right now, the puppet master extraordinaire has been Karl Rove. He's the guy with the
been the guy with the big purse and money talks and bullshit walks. Karl Rove just blew a hell of a lot of money in this last election to no effect, and something that he should have easily walked away from. Karl Rove's method of winning elections is seriously flawed. These get-out-the-base elections, they don't work. And now that there's blood in the water with Karl Rove, time to push him to the side and marginalize him, because if you can do that, then maybe you can get this party back, and it's much better to take over an existing organization, particularly one that the grassroots already supports the agenda of the Republican Party. The grassroots believes this stuff. The problem is the leadership is lying to you that they believe it. So if you can marginalize Karl Rove, you can marginalize the leadership and get this thing back. So I'll turn it over to you, Rex.
Oh, nice shooting, Tex.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And I think the thing that we all have to keep in mind is that elections have consequences. The consequences are that the person who wins the election is going to be your representative in government, whether it's your local school board, your city council, your state, or the federal Leviathan. And they're all important because we're seeing states' authority asserted again, and that battle is coming, so you better make sure you get to know your local people. And don't be fooled. Don't be fooled. We allegedly have a conservative Republican governor here in the Commonwealth, and he's not up for re-election this year because we don't let him run again. But this guy just helped the Democrats and the RINOs push through a gigantic multi-billion-dollar tax hike that also funds Obamacare. So, you know, you got to watch them. You got to see what they actually do and make sure that they don't get compromised and they don't get purchased. Well, what Karl Rove has done is made sure that that never happens. He's made sure that everyone is malleable, as my co-host has stated. And Gingrich has called him out on it. And Rand Paul is Mr. Republican up there on the Hill right now. He's actually speaking like a real Republican, a real conservative, Coolidge, Goldwater, Reagan, Gingrich, Ron Paul Republican, okay? And one of the best things Newt said was, you know, while Rove would like to argue his national nomination machine will protect Republicans from candidates like those who failed in Missouri and Indiana, that isn't the bigger story. Republicans lost winnable Senate races in Montana, North Dakota, Ohio, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Virginia, and Florida. So in 7 of the 9 losing races, the Rove model has no candidate-based explanation for failure. Rove's record is a record of failure. And the fact is that it is a record of failure for not only losing races, but when they actually win races, it's a failure for conservatism because it's the RINO that wins. It's the non-conservative Republican who wins. It's the one who'll go along to get along while feeding you all the rhetoric that you want to hear, so you can feel good when the Fox News tells you how conservative the douchebag is. Well, that's not the case, because authentic conservatism is not what Fox News or Rush Limbaugh tells you what it is. Authentic conservatism is governing within the bounds of the Constitution, not intervening all over the world unless we have to for a real security threat. And however you respond to a security defense threat, you do not compromise liberty at home, because if we lose liberty, then what's the point in the first place? It is up to you, Mr. and Mrs. America, Mr. and Mrs. Grassroots, to make this happen. It can be done. We've been here before. Our founding fathers were here against the British Crown and Parliament, okay? And we can win, and we don't have to use guns, but we'd better have the right to keep them, because it is guaranteed in the Constitution and it is fundamental to liberty for us to be armed. But what I want you to take the battle to is the conventions, the caucuses, the party meetings, and most importantly, the hearts and minds of those people out there who think they're Democrats but really are just legacy Democrats, or those who vote Republican without looking at as to whether the candidate is conservative or not, and maybe don't even understand conservatism. You've got to wake them up. You've got to build coalitions between people who love the Constitution, whether they're conservative, libertarian, some kind of combination of the two, or even disaffected Democrats and Occupy Wall Streeters who might need just a little bit of education to understand why the conservative message is appealing to everybody based on the principles of equal protection under the law, equal opportunity, and the right to determine your own destiny. That's what this party is supposed to stand for. That's what conservatism, whether it's in the Libertarian Party, the Constitution Party, the Republican Party, or wherever else it is supposed to stand for. That's what appeals to everybody. And the way that you can do that is reach out to one person a day, people wherever you meet them, whether it's in the grocery store line, or a church or anywhere else, and explain to them why this is important, why they need to get involved, and why they need to get locally active as grassroots voters who love the Constitution, who love liberty, and stop infighting with each other. Stop picking on someone's, you know, support of a traditional conservative like Gingrich in the past, or someone in support of a traditional Republican constitutionalist like Ron Paul, or even if somebody supported Gary Johnson and, you know, oh, you're a crazy libertarian. Don't do that. Build coalitions, because we have far more in common than we do differences, and we can do this. It is up to you, and Tex and Rex are here. We'll be back next Sunday, 10 p.m. Eastern. Please share the show. Spread the word. Call in. Share ideas. Even if you don't agree with us, that's what this is about. It's about having a free voice and trying to build up something that respects liberty, respects the Constitution. Okay, so please go to our Facebook page, the Tex and Rex Show. Like the page. You will get notifications in your news feed as to when we're broadcasting. Join Tex and Rex's Liberty Militia. It's a group where we post the articles and clips. You'll find the articles that Tex read from tonight, the one about Rubio, the ones from Politico, the Gingrich Productions, Human Events, even the clips from Fox News with Karl Rove trying to defend himself from the Politburo attack by Bob Woodward. And also in Blog Talk Radio, just click follow under the show icon, and you will receive notifications in your Blog Talk Radio profile. And please, tell people about the show. You know, it's worth a listen. Even if you don't always agree with us, we are here as champions of liberty, authentic conservative interpretation of the Constitution, and we'd love to hear from you. So, you know, call into the show and let us know what's going on. And download the show just by right-clicking the download link, and you can get an MP3 that you can email to people or burn a CD and give it to them. But the idea is to build a coalition of liberty-loving people who will go out there and do the heavy lifting and get rid of guys like Karl Rove, because, frankly, Karl Rove is the worst thing to happen to the Republican Party, and he needs to be ousted. So we'll see you next week. In the meantime, just keep fighting for building coalitions and for the Constitution, and don't get bogged down in things you can't do anything about. The nomination of the next Secretary of Defense, that's not going to change foreign policy. It's not going to make us safer. It's not going to make us less weak. It's not going to change anything. Don't focus on that. Focus on elections. In New Jersey and Virginia, it's 2013. Special elections are in several states. 2014 is just around the corner. It's time to start finding the candidates in your locality who are conservative. And if you can't find one, maybe you're that candidate. Step up if you love your country. This is Tex and Rex signing off.
Flames of Liberty will never die.